Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And now the Paradise Papers, released earlier this week, showing where some of the world's richest and most powerful people, including some in the Trump administration, are parking their money to avoid being taxed. Among other things this investigative journalism seems to have done is outed yet another Trump official, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, for having contacts with Russians close to Putin that he did not disclose when being confirmed for his job. Joining us now are Spencer Woodman, reporter at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, ICIJ, Martha Hamilton, who is also a reporter and editor at the consortium, and Jesse Drucker, New York Times reporter covering taxes and international business. Welcome to WNYC, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
And Spencer, I'll start with you. For the uninitiated, what are the Paradise Papers?
Sure. So this project draws from a cache of more than 13 million leaked documents from a offshore services provider called Appleby, which is based in Bermuda. And what that is, I mean, their business is to essentially help the most wealthy people and most powerful corporations park money offshore to tax havens like Bermuda, the Cayman Islands, the British Virgin Islands, where, you know, these wealthy clients enjoy features such as, of course, very low taxes or paying no taxes at all on their earnings, and also a very deep degree of financial privacy so that the public at large has very little chance to scrutinize everything that's going on in these various offshore havens.
Legal or illegal or a mix?
Much of it is legal, and that is kind of one of the big issues that this this investigation raises. You know, the people who can afford these services basically are given, in many cases, a magic bullet to avoid, you know, one of the very basic responsibilities under, you know, a democratic society, which is paying taxes that fund roads and bridges and everything else. But, you know, there is a certainly questions of compliance, and there is a lot of evidence that while much of what we see is legal, there is a lot of illicit and illegal activity happening offshore also.
So, Jesse Drucker from The Times, how much tax revenue is being lost here, and would the Trump or congressional tax reform bills address any of it?
Well, on the corporate side, the amount of revenue probably lost globally, the latest estimate from the OECD is around $250 billion a year. The Republican tax plan released last week would actually exacerbate a fair amount of the problem when it comes to multinationals. I mean, what we wrote about with Apple yesterday, them moving profits into offshore tax havens, there are a number of key provisions in the proposal from the Republicans that would actually provide new incentives to push profits into tax havens and would reward the companies that have accumulated over $2 trillion offshore for this type of behavior.
And the tax reform bills?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I'm referring to.
Sorry.
The tax bill from the Republicans last week includes two significant provisions that would provide both new incentives to push profits offshore and would also reward the companies that have already moved significant profits offshore.
Sorry,
like
I misunderstood.
Apple and Google and Cisco, yeah.
Yeah, to push profits offshore. They're talking publicly about having provisions that would incentivize individuals and businesses to bring profits back from overseas.
Yeah, I mean, that's somewhat misleading. I mean, it would provide incentives, but what that also means is it's providing a reward And a benefit for the companies that have moved these profits offshore. In other words, you know, multinationals have moved, have accumulated about $2.5 trillion offshore. And the reason they do that is because the way the U.S. system works is that companies are supposed to pay corporate income tax in the U.S. on their worldwide income, but they get a basically an indefinite deferral on the profits that are offshore. And so they have an incentive to move as much profit as possible into Bermuda, Cayman, Luxembourg, et cetera. They've accumulated over $2 trillion offshore, and this is sort of a dilemma for some of these companies because they would like to use some of that cash here in the U.S. to buy back stock and to pay dividends to their shareholders. What one of the proposals in the Republican plan does is it basically says, we are going to force you to bring that back, but we're going to do it at a much reduced rate. And I think that for the most part, companies view this as kind of a win-win. They would pay a little bit more tax on those profits, and they'd be able to do with the cash whatever they want.
Listeners, your questions, welcome, about the Paradise Papers, such a big and complicated piece of investigative journalism, a lot of moving parts, and we're picking through what's really important here with Spencer Woodman, reporter at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, ICIJ, Martha Hamilton, also reporter and editor at ICIJ, and Jesse Drucker, who was just speaking, New York Times correspondent, covering taxes and international business. He was also involved in this investigation. Listeners, your questions about the Paradise Papers, welcome at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Martha, you've got the piece of this that's been making the most headlines, revealing that some of Donald Trump's advisors have even more connections to Russia than were previously known, particularly Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. You co-wrote that story. Can you tell us more about the potential conflict of interest and potentially covering up Russia contacts during his confirmation process?
Well, the first thing I should say is that to some extent, Wilbur Ross did disclose his connections to Navigator, which is connected to the Russian company Seabur, which is really well connected to Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin. But it was disclosed in such a way that you had to go to one piece of information here, one piece of information there, make your way through more than 50 pages of disclosure statements, and then put it all together.
Navigator Holdings did not come up during his confirmation hearing, right?
It did not. There were questions about another shipping holding that he has, Diamond Shipping, but none about Navigator, because it simply wasn't very easy to find that connection in the disclosure documents.
So what is Navigator Holdings?
Navigator Holdings is an international shipping company headquartered in London. It was some years ago, it was in a bankruptcy proceeding, which is where Wilbur Ross first got involved. Ross began buying shares. He made a lot of money when the company went public. And having divested himself of 80 holdings to become Secretary of Commerce, it seemed important to find out why he held on to just the few that had an interest in Navigator.
And why should people be alarmed about Wilbur Ross's ties to this Putin-linked shipping company? He's allowed, right?
He's allowed, but he's also the Secretary of Commerce, and he's very much in the middle of all decisions about trade policy. The Commerce Department has a major role to play in regulating shipping as well. So there are potential conflicts of interest all over the place. And Wilbur Ross is a very detail-oriented guy. So he may not have ever sat down with any of the three Russians who are major shareholders in the company, but he was certainly aware of their existence.
Let's take a phone call. Joe at Jones Beach. You're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good.
I just have a worry and a question. About a year ago, I guess, I called the show, asked, are we going to find out who the Americans are that have all of this money offshore? The second question is, which we never found out, the second question is, when these companies bring home trillions of dollars, are they going to use that money to circumvent or co-opt movements here politically and by politicians? That kind of money all in at once worries me.
Those are big questions that are probably, you know, the answers are different for different people. But Spencer, you want to take a shot at that?
Sure. So actually, we do have quite a lot of American names in this new leak of data. Whereas the Panama Papers leak, which was from a separate law firm, and we published those stories last year, contained very few American names. This Appleby, the current law firm that we're focusing on, has quite a lot of American names. And to your question about the potential political influence of offshore money being repatriated for political purposes, one of my stories focuses on a man named James Simons, who is one of the richest people in the United States. He's his fortune is from Renaissance Technologies, which is one of the most profitable hedge funds on the planet. And through our searching through this data, we found that he had amassed one of the largest trusts, one of the largest fortunes ever contained in a trust fund in Bermuda. This was a trust fund worth $7.25 billion in 2010, projected to be worth about $15 billion today. And Mr. Simons is also a very active Democratic donor.
Democratic donor?
That's right, Democratic donor.
Because so, doesn't he have some connection to the Mercers?
Well, right. Robert Mercer, the co-CEO of Renaissance Technologies, is, of course, his business partner. And Robert Mercer is one of, you know, the most prominent backers of Donald Trump and other conservative causes, including Breitbart News.
Must have interesting dinner conversations.
I would assume so. Yeah, I'd love to be a fly on the wall there. And when we asked Mr. Simons about this just staggeringly large fortune that he had amassed in Bermuda that really no one had known about before, he responded by saying that he had transferred it into a charitable foundation. Which is also based in Bermuda, also essentially no one knew about this charitable foundation, although yesterday we reported that it would count among the largest foundations in the United States were it to be here. So what I'm getting to is that basically, you know, this charitable foundation, it's unclear what its exact bylaws are, but it and things like it, large pots of money offshore that are opaque and that very few people know about, could certainly be repatriated to back causes. In this case, they would have to be strictly charitable causes that could further advocacy issues of all kinds. So
we're talking about the Paradise Papers released earlier this week, showing where some of the world's richest and most powerful people, including some in the Trump administration, are parking their money to avoid being taxed. With Spencer Woodman, who was just talking, reporter at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, Martha Hamilton, reporter and editor at the consortium, who co-wrote the story about Wilbur Ross and his previously unknown connections to Russia, and Jesse Drucker, New York Times reporter covering taxes and international business, and Jean-Marie, or is it Jean-Marie, in Chelsea?
Yes. Hi, yes, I'm calling from Chelsea. I was wondering if you could possibly discuss these national corporations operating in international markets' indebtedness to American taxpayers, and in fact, why they should pay taxes. Because we live in an era that's very anti-tax, with all of the Republican, it's un-American to pay taxes and whatnot, with all of this anti-tax sentiment. But in fact, can you discuss some of the advantages they enjoy by being a U.S. corporation, by being promoted and defended by U.S. government agencies, taking advantage of tax-funded research from NASA, Defense Department, State Department, and whatnot?
And I think you partly answered your own question with those examples. Martha, is this something you can address?
They do get considerable benefits from being United States-headquartered companies, and they're paying very little of it back. I think Apple and Google and all of the tech companies have benefited considerably from research in the United States, and we're not seeing much return on that investment.
And Jesse, the Paradise Papers also revealed things about Twitter and Facebook, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little far afield from the tax issues, but, you know, the story that Spencer and I spent several months working on detailed how a big early important investor in both Facebook and Twitter, a successful venture capitalist from Russia named Yuri Milner, was heavily reliant on state funding from Russia, or funding from two significant state-controlled financial institutions, VTB Bank and Gazprom Invest Holdings. And the significance of that, you know, in part is that VTB, for example, it's a bank. It's a multinational bank with significant operations around the world. But it's also an institution that has been used pretty consistently by the Kremlin for politically sensitive deals and operations. And so to see the Kremlin showing up as basically a secret investor in Twitter raises a lot of questions about the source of their interest in making an investment like that. I think it also sort of raises questions about the sources of Mr. Milner's wealth. I mean, to some degree, it shows how he is basically part of this system in Russia where you have a bunch of billionaires who have essentially gotten extremely wealthy through their political connections to Vladimir Putin and Dmitry Medvedev and other people, and have used those political connections and public resources to, in some cases, to bankroll their private investments and their private wealth. And I think what we discovered in these stories, or in the story that Spencer and I did, is that Mr. Medvedev and you know, in turn, Facebook and Twitter were really reliant on this system of capital flight in Russia, where very wealthy people are essentially making use of the public resources to get rich themselves.
Anything to add to that, Spencer?
No, not specifically on that story.
But there's also, Jesse, some kind of business association between Yuri Milner and Jared Kushner?
Yeah, Yuri Milner is an investor in a company that Jared Kushner started a couple of years ago, a real estate technology company called Cadre, and Jared Kushner is still an investor in that company.
Walter in Marlboro, you're on WNYC. Hi, Walter.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to kind of raise the issue or comparison of this whole method of repatriating profits that will pay little or no taxes to foreign kidnappers who kidnap Americans and then ask for ransom. And we have a policy of not paying off ransom, because if we do, we just encourage that kind of behavior. So it seems that this is behavior that we have encouraged in the past, and if we pay him off, it'll continue to happen.
That's interesting. You're making an analogy with kidnapping, in that if we pay off these businesses by giving them breaks on repatriating their money, that they'll have incentive to move money offshore in the future, so they'll get those breaks again in the future. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Instead of paying their fair share of taxes if they did not participate in that kind of behavior. And the other thing which I just recalled is that, in effect, many of them do not physically actually bring the money in and are still buying treasuries, etc., but they are not registered as domestic. In other words, financially, they're still earning, but officially they're not invested in America. I don't know how that works, but...
Walter, thank you very much. Michael in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Lehr. I wanted to ask your guest, thank you. First off, congratulations on a great reporting. My question is about fairness. How can Americans actually believe that the U.S. tax code is going to be reformed to get all that cash, all the $2.5 trillion back into the U.S. when the Panama Papers were reported last year? Now we have the Paradise Papers, and the U.S. tax code was not reformed. Many of these multinational corporations have many of their dollars actually spent lobbying U.S. Congress to keep the tax code in their favor, and yet these tax evaders, not aware of these tax evaders, have not and probably will not be prosecuted. So Americans believe in responsibility and accountability. I'm very skeptical, given from last year the Panama Papers and other times when tax evaders were not prosecuted in America, that things are going to change now. So why should we believe that it will?
I don't know, Spencer, if we should believe that it will. You can disagree with that if you want, but how could it change? Do you address that in the series?
Yeah, you know, I think we do address it in places in the series. This is getting to kind of the central issue of our investigation, and that is that a lot of this stuff that we are exposing is legal. It follows, you know, it follows the letter of the law. And in some cases, it's murkier. I think Justin Trudeau yesterday, if I remember correctly, said that, you know, the Canadian names that emerged, or at least some of them that emerged in the Paradise Papers, are going to be investigated. But, you know, in terms of, I mean, I think from an ICIJ standpoint, we think that even if the solutions are certainly complicated and would involve coordination among many countries and really just a critical mass of nations across the globe, a place to start is certainly with trying to open up a little bit of what's actually happening out there so we know what we're addressing. So we are trying to create a bit of transparency where there was none before, and hopefully that will start a conversation and it will inform policymakers and people who think and write and vote.
Martha, anything to add to that about what all this Paradise Papers reporting has revealed that could potentially be addressed through policy changes?
Well, it does have to be addressed worldwide, because what you see is that when one tax loophole closes, another opens up in another country. You know, the regulators are always a few steps behind the people who create these ways to avoid paying taxes. So unless there's a comprehensive worldwide approach to the problem, you're not going to solve it.
Martha, do you find any way other than what we've already talked about regarding Wilbur Ross that the findings in this Paradise Papers investigative report could open up new avenues in the Russia investigation?
I don't really see that, no.
Jess?
I think the...
Go ahead, Martha. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Jess, anything on that?
Well, I mean, anything that I say on that would be totally speculative, so I'm not going to speculate on that. I mean, I would like to say something just to kind of follow up on what your original question was, which mm-hmm. is, you know, on the on kind of tax reform, specifically with respect to multinational companies and corporate tax, there actually has been quite a bit of movement on this front overseas, both with the OECD, which is kind of promulgating guidelines for countries, including the U.S. They're based in Europe, but they're dealing with countries all around the world. And a lot of countries within Europe, as well as Brazil, as well as India, have actually been much more aggressive on trying to deal with this stuff. A big obstacle to this has been the U.S. The U.S. has both been very resistant to some of the stuff the OECD has been trying to do on multinationals. And the U.S. has, in some ways, over the last couple of years, really emerged as a leading tax haven and secrecy jurisdiction because it refuses to sign on to some of the new information sharing guidelines that virtually every other civilized country has signed on to. So the U.S. both currently, but under the Obama administration as well, kind of emerged as a very big obstacle to a lot of this reform. Part of it is because, you know, the biggest multinationals around the world are, for the most part, U.S. companies. And so they're the ones that are really benefiting from a lot of these loopholes that permit them to leave profits offshore and avoid paying tax.
Spencer, want to wrap this up just by telling people how they can see the reporting on the Paradise Papers. This is a multi-news organization investigation. So in what form will people find it and where?
Sure. Go to icij.org. All of our stories are there. Jesse's stories are on the New York Times website. Martha, do you have any better advice than this?
No, icij.org is the most comprehensive place to see them.
ICIJ is the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. where Spencer Woodman is a reporter and Martha Hamilton is a writer and editor, and Jesse Drucker, who did work on this for the New York Times, as you heard, is a reporter who covers taxes and international business. Thank you all so much for enlightening us on the Paradise Papers.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you.